There's no top of funnel, middle of funnel, and bottom of funnel anymore.
Right.
Because you're like, hey, look, I want to advertise native deodorant. Like, you know, when I used to advertise in 2015, I'm like, exclude all of our existing customers. Hey, let's do a lookalike audience. Let's put some, you know, we want women between 35 and 55. Maybe we want like them to be driving Cadillac
this
Escalades.
This is Facebook or your dating profile? What percentage of existing customers do you see come through ASC when you're trying to find new customers?
A lot. And like a decent amount of budget is spent
on existing. I'm seeing like 30 to 50.
So I guess with ASC, you've lost all that targeting and that creative, right? You don't do a top of funnel creative and bottom of funnel creative in ASC because anybody could see anything. And so you kind of have to put them all together and hope Facebook knows what it's doing.
This is Limited Supply, the place for refreshingly real takes on what D2C is really like.
We're your hosts, Nick and Moyes. Let's start talking about money.
Have you ever heard of Red Stag Fulfillment? They're one of the only 3PLs that we're a fan of, and I'll tell you why. They're backed by 3 performance guarantees with their clients. 0 shrink, 0 missed picks, and 0 missed shipments. In fact, if they miss one of those guarantees, they fix it at no cost to you, of course. But they'll also pay you $50 per instance for the inconvenience. If you want to learn more, check out redstag.com/limited.
All right, Nick, we're back for season 8. This is episode 1. We've taken a couple weeks.
We're almost at 100 episodes.
No. When there's 100 episodes, can we do that
lazy
thing?
We have to throw
a
party.
Oh, can we do the lazy thing where we just do the flashbacks of the last best of 99 episodes like they do on like Seinfeld?
Yeah.
We've done 100. We don't want to
waste everyone's
time. Yeah, that's Okay, we've got a bunch of stuff to talk about today. One is I want to talk about the volatility on Facebook. We're recording this in very early April. It's been incredibly volatile past 30 days on Facebook. I want to talk about some updates with Outdoor Voices, a little bit of your thoughts on Ozempic and some business ideas. I'm really excited about episode 2 as well. On episode 2, you've got like a cheat sheet from Meta about their best strategies, best businesses on Meta. Like, you know, I'm really excited to hear that.
Yeah.
But let's start with this volatility.
Okay.
It's been very clear on Twitter that there's volatility.
Yeah.
I'm a member of this forum called E-Commerce Fuel. Inside there, it's been very clear that there's volatility. Let's start with the brands that you're running the ads. Are you seeing volatility in the brands where you're running the ads?
Yeah, there are some accounts that have a lot of that volatility. What I've seen is basically the brands that are not as well-known brands have experienced more volatility and experience a lot more ups and downs in their ad accounts. Versus those that seem to have it.
How big do you have to be a well-known brand? You're saying brands that are not...
You don't need to be a household name, but like what I mean by well-known is like they're out there. They're not just a lower funnel ads only brand. Like they're out there, you know, they might be in retail. They might be doing events. They might be they're in the press. They're in the news. People are talking about them. It's not just siloed towards ads. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm not sure I agree with that. Like, you know, I talked to Cody at Jones Road Beauty and he's been on Twitter and very vocal about like Facebook has been really rough.
Yeah.
He is not a lower funnel drop shipper. He's building a real brand.
Yeah.
And like, you know, the face of that brand is somebody who's like a name that everyone's heard of.
Yeah. So fair.
I think
just within our clients, I would say, if I were to split it.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
And then you run ads for some people as well, right? And have you seen it personally? Like, so you've seen it.
March was rough. I don't know if you can hear it in my voice, but I got grabbed at my throat by clients all March. And that's the worst part of it is like.
They're your clients?
Yeah.
Or you're their client?
We'll never know.
Okay. So
that's the problem though, is like Facebook, you know, Facebook had issues all throughout March. First, it was like ad accounts were accelerating spend during parts of the day. Then it was like they weren't spending at all.
Yeah.
And then there was an issue. The one that Cody brought up actually is, I think, very close to potentially being a real issue, which was there was some Chrome update that I think messed up a lot of tracking and a lot of attribution and a lot of what Facebook was doing in March too.
When I talk to people at Facebook, they're like, look, we have a lot of people who are saying this is the worst ever or like really bad. And then we still have people who are like, this is the best we've ever seen.
There's some ad accounts that just are never affected.
I don't understand how it's possible that so many people can experience volatility and some people are like, absolutely none. This is great. Like,
yeah.
But anyway, I'm not sure what's been happening, but my account rep or account reps at Facebook have told me that they have experienced a lot of CIVs, which is what they call like service outages, basically. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, we don't know if that's contributed to the volatility that's happened in March and in early April, but it could be that. I think Facebook Ad Manager has become a lot less reliable in the past 30 days as well, where, like, you know, there was this old adage where Criteo would take it, like, Criteo, if you use Criteo, they'd be like, oh, we got you 75 sales yesterday.
First of all, why?
Why would you use Criteo? But they'd be like, we got you 75 sales yesterday. We're awesome. And you'd be like, my Shopify system says I got 32 sales all day yesterday. Right. So who were these other 43 that you came up with?
Yeah.
And I feel like Facebook Ad Manager has been like that recently, taking credit for a ton of orders that have not been happening. I'm not sure if it's related to a Google Chrome update or not, but it has been really rough.
Yeah. Part of it too is like, you know, you see all these companies like Blotout, Elevar, Black Crow, they come out with these better solutions for pixels or to pass data back. And part of the issue too is that prior to the whole Apple update, there was so much more data being ingested back into Facebook to help make smarter decisions. And today's version of the Pixel that Facebook puts out and Facebook has their advertisers put on their page or install in their site is just not that strong.
I agree with that a little bit, but you know, iOS 14.5 was several years ago.
Yeah, that was years ago.
You know, January, I didn't hear the issues that people are experiencing in March. There's been a change in the last 45 days.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to get to the bottom of it, but it feels like there's been a change.
Yeah.
I did want to talk about a couple other things that have changed in with Facebook. They have this new thing that's called Advantage Plus shopping campaigns. Mm-hmm. And basically they're like, look, no more, you let us handle all targeting. You don't do any more targeting yourself. You don't really upload lookalike audiences. You don't do interest audiences anymore. You just give us the creative and we'll run it towards people that will be most likely to purchase or whatever your conversion objective is. And I think like one of the interesting things about that is there's no top of funnel, middle of funnel, and bottom of funnel anymore.
Right.
Because you're like, hey, look, I want to advertise native deodorant. Like, you know, when I used to advertise in 2015, I'm like, exclude all of our existing customers. Let's do a lookalike audience. Let's put some, you know, we want women between 35 and 55. Maybe we want like them to be driving Cadillac Escalades.
This is Facebook or your dating profile? What percentage of existing customers do you see come through ASC when you're trying to find new customers?
A lot. And like a decent amount of budget is spent on
existing. I'm seeing like 30 to 50.
So I guess with ASC, you've lost all that targeting and that creative, right? You don't do a top of funnel creative and bottom of funnel creative in ASC because anybody could see anything. And so you kind of have to put them all together and hope Facebook knows what it's doing. And I think the other hard part about that is I found that if you do that existing budget cap where you're like, look, this is my existing audience, I want to advertise only 0% or 10% or 20% like to my existing audience, I feel like Facebook punishes you. I'm not entirely sure that it does, but I feel like it punishes you.
Yeah, I get that same gut feeling as well.
And you know, one of the other things that's hard with ASCs is there's no gender. Like you can now exclude locations, but you can't exclude genders. So let's say you're creating an ASC campaign and you're Nike or you're Aloe Yoga. Okay, you've got men's clothing and you've got women's clothing.
Yeah.
So, you know, what do you do? You like, how does Facebook say, like, you know, in the past, what you do say is, okay, I'm creating a campaign at the ad set level. I'm going to target gender. This is my men's campaign. I'm going to put men's shoes and men's shorts and men's shirts on here and a bunch of men looking buff and running. And then I'm going to do a women's campaign and I'm going to put beautiful women, like, you know, and the women will, it'll serve the women and the men will serve the men. And now that doesn't exist anymore in ASC. You can't do gender targeting.
Right.
So I'm not sure how brands like Aloe and Nike do this. Does ASC just get smart and they're like, okay, this looks like it's a woman. Like, you know, how do brands do that?
I feel like that's probably how it is. It just understands like based on your actions, it'll just assume you're a guy.
Yeah, but how does, like, Aloe Yoga is like, okay, here's a bunch of creative.
Yeah.
How do you know?
My guess is it just reads the creative. And then,
they're like, here's a man in this creative, serve it to men. Here's
and,
a woman.
And the report that we'll talk about in the next episode, they actually talk a little bit about that, like how to target based on using creative. And one of the things they mentioned was, or the way that I interpreted it was, the same way AT&T, when AT&T has a commercial, right? When we see a commercial for AT&T in New York City, it's very different than somebody watching it in New Mexico or somebody watching it in LA. And sort of what they were saying too was like, you have to now target with the creative, like what is in the creative. I don't know, again, how they're reading that and then deciding, but one thing that clearly they have something that does it And they suggest that you target based on the creative. So the colors you use in the creative, the type of models you use in the creative, like that will basically find that audience.
That's really interesting.
They're also, from what I heard from another partner, not, I didn't hear this from Facebook, but I heard from somebody else that within the next year or year and a half, they're taking away targeting completely.
Wow.
And you can overbid on certain, I don't know if it was certain interests or certain, you can overbid on something or you can underbid on certain things, but you can't necessarily go in and choose interest-based targeting. Like that's something that's
they're removing interest-based targeting.
Yeah.
Or, but not all targeting, just interest-based.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, I feel like interest-based targeting is sort of obsolete
being
already.
Phased out, yeah.
You know, it's really tough as you, what if you're like, I'm selling menorahs or I'm selling Christian crosses or something for Muslims or something, like, you know, then how do you do that targeting when it's AS, like, you know, does AS, like, you know, Facebook has got to learn, okay, this is going for Muslims. This is going for people who celebrate some random holiday.
Yeah.
So I think that's really tough because Facebook has to be like, this is what this person is targeting. Like if I were selling MAGA hats, I'd want to target it only towards Republicans, right? So it's got to see the hat and be like, okay, this hat means Republican. Means targeting means Republican. So, okay, I can get the women and the men, but it has to be so sophisticated to understand what the photo is and be like, ah, I see what you want out of here.
This is how I've always thought Facebook works. So I think of Facebook as like a living being, like the ads manager is a living being.
For sure.
And I think it's very similar to how TikTok decides what blows up and what doesn't blow up. So let's say you put up an ad for, you know, really a diamond-studded Christian cross.
Yeah.
Okay. If that's offensive, beautiful. I apologize. So you put that up, and my guess is it basically, it'll show it to a couple thousand people and start to understand where is the engagement coming from, who's slowing down, who's clicking, who's maybe reading a comment, who left a comment, who shared it to, in Messenger to somebody else. And then it'll slowly start to identify what is it that those people have who engaged that is a positive signal that we need to go after more people like that. And so it might be certain, you know, maybe they listen to Christian rock on Spotify and that's a common interest. So now it's going to start to focus on,
it's got, okay, these 10 people all listen to Christian rock. It must be all Christian.
Exactly. And from what I've seen, when you go broad and let Facebook sort of figure that out and decide, it'll still say broad on Facebook, but it's pretty niche after a few thousand dollars.
Okay.
The reason why going broad was so big for brands when we were spending, you know, $1 million a month 5-6 years ago was because there was so much data that the Pixel already knew. So when it did go broad, it wasn't truly going broad.
Yeah.
It was like going broad to a subset of what it knew would convert. I'm surprised there's not a black market for seasoned Pixels for this reason, because I think that based on the learnings, it's like your Spotify, right? When you put songs in your Spotify liked playlist and then you go to a song and you click go to song radio, it's very biased based off what's in your liked playlist as well.
Let's say there was a black market for seasoned Pixels.
Yeah.
And I was selling diamond studded crosses.
Yeah.
I would want to buy a Pixel from another Christian brand. Where
yes.
Like, okay, gotcha.
100%.
Yeah, okay.
Because even if you're a new brand, right? Yeah. If you're a new brand, you might have to spend like a few thousand bucks just for Facebook to even pick understood. Up on, because think about, you have to get traffic to your site.
Yeah.
Your site's probably not gonna be super optimized, so you have to like flush that funnel. But yeah, like if you could pick up a seasoned Pixel, that might be like an arbitrage opportunity.
That's interesting. I bet a seasoned Pixel, like, you know, the price of seasoning your Pixel or a seasoned Pixel would probably be about, I would guess it'd be around the same, but maybe it wouldn't be.
Yeah.
Okay, a couple other things I wanted to talk about Facebook, because when I was thinking about this change over the past 45 days, I was like, what else has changed since I was really deep in Facebook? One is like video is king now.
Videos,
like, you know, when I used to run Facebook ads 8 years ago, all you needed was Photoshop and, you know, an image that you downloaded from Google Images illegally. Well, or like, you know, from Getty or whatever, you license it. Now you need to be...
you license photos from Getty?
Now you need to like be a good content creator. You need like real genuine content.
I could not agree more. Yeah. Like, it is truly the brands who create good content are the ones that win, in my opinion.
Here's
good original content
that
is entertaining and bright, flashy, colorful.
Yeah.
Those guys crush.
Yeah.
And those don't come out of these routine studios where you pay $7 for a photo.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. They don't. Here's one other thing that I found is that people have been talking about warming up creatives. Hmm. And I've never heard that before until the last 3 months. And now I'm hearing it. Like, it used to be, you know, you didn't warm up creatives. Well, maybe you did warm up creatives, but it's a different way. Like people are talking about now, what you do is, let's say you have an ASC campaign where you're just testing a bunch of stuff that's spending $1,000 a day, but your big one's spending $10,000 a day. You test a bunch of ads here, the best ones, you stop and you pull into your $10,000 one, and you use the ad ID number to pull into your $10,000 one. And as a result, that creative has already been warmed up in your like testing campaign, and now you're bringing it over into your scaling campaign. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to just put in a bunch of new creatives in your $10,000 one for Facebook to optimize which one it should spend at. You want to warm up creative at a small level and then bring it to a big level.
Yeah.
That is not something that people thought about 5 years ago.
That's really?
Not even something people thought about 3 years ago. There was one thing that people would do, which was you might go out and start your ad in
like an engagement campaign.
Yeah. Like, or you actually just start it as like a different objective maybe, or you might start it in like the UK or France, like somewhere where it'd be really cheap cost per clicks and cheap engagement and cheap comments. Like you're like, let's get some social proof on this thing and then we'll bring it over into the United States. So that was a way that you might like warm up creatives 5 years ago, although I never really thought you needed to do that. You feel like that's been happening for a while?
Yeah, like I remember at Hint, we had like two or three campaigns that were 30 to 50K budgets per day. Or ad sets. And then we had other ad sets that were a few $1,000s a day. And we would basically, we would put creative into the smaller budgets, see how it did. And if it showed signs of life, then we would take that post ID and throw it in the big one.
Yeah.
But the big one
would, you were doing this.
Yeah. Big one was only, and that was, 6 years ago.
Yeah.
The big one was only proven creatives that like had real scale potential.
What was the difference of your ad budgets between the one that you were like testing and the one that you were scaling? Like
probably like 5K versus 40K a day.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah.
There's a couple other things I want to talk about Facebook. One is, do you know this guy named Andrew Foxwell?
Oh yeah. Love him.
Yeah. So he put this thing in his email newsletter. I like to read his email newsletter. I'm not a part of his organization.
Me neither.
I'm not I don't have any equity. I'm not an advisor or anything. I don't even know any of the brands actually in his organization. But he put out this email and he said, usually 7 day click beats from an attribution window perspective. He said, usually 7 day click beats 7 day click / 1 day view. And he said, switching has some short term pain. But he says overall, he's like the TLDR is 7 day click is better than 7 day click, 1 day view. I've tested a bunch of those things. I tried 7 day click, 1 day click. I've tested it, like all the variants that Facebook really lets you do. I never found any difference. Yeah. I would imagine it's very category driven. But I thought that was interesting because he put this on there and he's like, generally, this is what I've seen.
Yeah. Did he say like what tool he was using to measure that? Like, was he using something like Northbeam?
No, he didn't say anything.
Interesting.
Like, at least I don't remember. I saw the email. I didn't reach out to him or talk to him.
I just saw his
email and I was like, oh, that's interesting.
That is really interesting.
The other thing I wanted to talk about was Shop. Like Facebook Shop is now getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I feel like every time I talk to people at Facebook, they're like, we're putting more and more emphasis onto this. In part, it's probably to combat that iOS 14. You know, you're talking about how, does Facebook have data? Well, if it owns the entire transaction and the sale process, it has all the data in the world. I talked to a Facebook person recently. She said that some brands were seeing 20% of their revenue coming from Shop. And that there's at least one brand doing $1 million a month on Facebook Shops.
Wow.
They like, they're doing $1 million a month of revenue on Facebook Shops.
Any idea of the AOV difference between products being sold on Shop versus not?
No. That's a good question.
Because even if I think about the top TikTok Shop brands, they're generally sub $70 probably.
Why do you think that would affect it? Because, why do you think that would be...
I just think Like if you're buying a mattress, you probably need a lot of social proof, a lot of validation, trust, et cetera. I don't know that you could get those on the Shops. Even if I was buying like a pan, I'd probably want to see a lot more than what the real estate is within Shops. That said, I think that's something that could change easily. Like Facebook could easily, even TikTok could be like, we're putting a whole page builder inside this.
Yeah.
And we could just skip your site completely.
Yeah, that's right. I think Facebook will get to that.
Yeah.
Like they'll do a better job and like support subscriptions and all that kind of stuff. I'm pretty bearish on Shopify today, more bearish than I've ever been as a result of these shops coming out.
Yeah.
See, the thing is, I'm not sure if it would be low AOV or high AOV. One of the things that I'd be worried about is like, when you're shopping on direct-to-consumer sites, a lot of worries are, is this a legit site? Is this a crappy dropshipper? What's going on here? And Facebook shops alleviate a lot of that because you're like, okay, this is happening through Facebook. Facebook right. says this ships 100% on time. All like, you know, you sort of see a third party verifying that this thing will actually get through.
Sure.
While with a direct-to-consumer site, I've seen social proof.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, you know, I once bought this watch. I was like, this is a beautiful watch for $9 on Shopify. And I got it. And I was like, oh yeah, you get what you
What'd you expect for $9?
I was like, this is beautiful. I was like, it looks amazing. I should say yeah. it looks amazing. And when I got it, I was like, okay, this is the worst watch I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But I actually still looked okay. It just felt terrible. But like, you know, that social, like I wasn't sure I would get it. But if I bought it through Facebook shops, it would be much more likely that I'd be like, okay, yeah, I know I'm going to get it because Facebook is acting as this intermediary and will punish this guy if he doesn't ship out packages 50% of the time.
Yeah, two thoughts. One is I think the Facebook shops or the TikTok shops will be the equivalent of a prior generation's reason to use PayPal.
Yeah.
When they check out.
Yeah.
The second is...
That's my generation, by the way.
Yeah, that's your generation. The second one is, like, I wonder if, you know, if you're ordering Skims or... something like from a really prestigious brand, like, will that still convert on shops or will shops be more so focused on like commoditized type of products?
I think it'll be everything in part because I think it's someday Facebook will be like, okay, it's cheaper to advertise when it goes to shops.
Yeah.
It's your Shopify website because we get more information and it makes us better as a platform for other people to advertise. So if you want to drive people to your Shopify website, no problem.
We'll just charge you 30% premium. Yeah,
exactly. That's why I think one day Shopify will be fucked because one day Facebook will be like, why don't we just make everything happen on us?
Yeah.
And then Shopify will be like, okay, well, if I had to guess, and I'm sure someone at Shopify knows this, I would guess more than 50% of traffic to Shopify websites comes through Facebook. Might come through a Google search after Facebook, someone clicks a Facebook link.
Yeah.
But I would guess that all the originator of
the discovery.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd be curious to know like what percentage of traffic is down on Shopify globally from brands that tend to get most of their traffic from Facebook.
Over the past 45 days?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even the past, 6 months.
Yeah, I'm curious as well. I wonder if it's like, you know, people were like, oh, it's Temu. Like, it's so funny. In the United States, people are like, let's ban TikTok. I feel like e-commerce entrepreneurs are like, we need TikTok.
Yeah,
ban Temu.
Let's get the other one out.
Yeah, yeah. Get the guys who are shipping goods here. We need them out of here.
Yeah.
Like, TikTok, we need. Temu, get out. There's one other thing that's happening that's big at Facebook is influencers will have the ability to tag an item in your shop in the second half of this year, I think. They're launching a new feature.
They're basically coming for TikTok.
Yeah, they're coming for TikTok.
I think that'll come with an affiliate program as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's when I think that it'll be harder for Shopify as well because people, like influencers will be like, okay, I don't want a coupon code. I'm going to tag your product.
Yeah.
You'll go to your Facebook shop and the transaction will happen in your Facebook shop and I'll get credit for it.
I'm curious to see how that plays out on Instagram for a couple reasons. One, I think there's obviously a handful of brands, bunch of brands that are doing really well on TikTok shop. And obviously TikTok is still huge, but I feel like at least maybe it's just this bubble of people that I know, the usage of TikTok has gone down since the shops have sort of taken over the feed and everything is about, it's either an ad or it's selling a product. There's less like genuine content there. I wonder if something like that or something similar will happen to Instagram or if Instagram will be fine because there's back-to-back ads anyways and stories at this point.
I think both of them are going to be fine. First, I don't have that experience on TikTok. Like, I don't see only product sales. I still see genuinely viral content. You know, Instagram is too smart to be like the value of Instagram is too important to be like, okay, it's not a TV commercial platform. It's a, you know, social engagement platform. And I think the people at Facebook are too smart to be like, just throw ads. When engagement drops, they'll be like, this is too much. Pull back.
Yeah.
So there may be a little bit of like, okay, let's test to see where that level is. But I don't think it'll be like, you know, they're smart people. They know.
Totally.
People have been engaged with Instagram for a decade now that are not going to like, they're not giving it up anytime soon.
Yeah.
It's a crown jewel in their portfolio. Think about Kim Kardashian and Judy, right? Or think about Mr. Beast and Feastables. It would be so much more powerful if you could tag an item and drive people, like, you know, apply a coupon code already, get people a checkout right away.
Yeah.
And when that happens,
I mean, not even that, but just Mr. Beast being like, yo, anybody who likes Feastables, I'll give you 10%.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay.
That'll, you know, that'll pop up.
You mean
100,000 salespeople?
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. That's
overnight.
Right. Yeah. That's right. All my entire army of people who love me.
Herbalife comes to Instagram.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great way of thinking about it. Yeah. MLMs, you empower everyone.
This is basically MLM in a very legal and justified way.
But yeah, that's right.
A lot of times on Limited Supply, you hear us talking bad about 3PLs. And it's because they just make so many mistakes or they're just not founder friendly. But let me tell you about one that is, and that's called RedStag. This year, year to date, they are at a 99.993% accuracy across inbound inventory, order accuracy, and on-time shipping. In fact, during a recent complete inventory audit RedStag conducted for one of their clients across 10,000 pallet locations and 200,000 units, they had a 99.999% inventory accuracy. And yes, they wrote a check for the 0.001% shrink. That's the beauty of RedStag. They promise you zero shrink, zero mispicks, and zero misshipments. And if they're wrong, not only do they fix it, but they'll pay you for that. If you want to learn more, visit redstag.com/limited.
Okay, I wanted to go on to one other thing, which is, let's say you're struggling with Facebook ads, or you're thinking about, like, you know, getting, you got to get smarter with Facebook ads. You're like, look, I'm the CEO of an organization. I can't do this all by myself any longer. How do you hire someone to run Facebook ads? Like, what are the questions you ask to find out if someone's qualified to run your ads for you? You could go to an agency, obviously, and vet that agency. But, you know, I feel like if you go to an agency, every agency is actually 50 different teams. And each one of those teams is 50 different companies. You don't know who you're really going to work with. And so you might go to agency XYZ, but it's like you got team. Did you get the A team, the B team, the C team? Like, you know, is the C team good or are they not good?
Yeah.
And so I think that, like, that is certainly like another question possibly, which is, how do you vet an agency? Let's say you're hiring internally. How do you look for this internally?
I mean, first is like just making sure they're qualified in the sense that they've done this before, they've bought media, et cetera. I think after you've understood that they are a media buyer, we do actually a couple things.
Do they have to have spent a certain budget to be like a media buyer? Like, how much of a budget should they have spent to be like, okay, you know how to do this?
I mean, I think they should be comfortable spending $1 million a month previously.
That's a lot.
Yeah, which isn't, there's not a lot of people who've done that, but... Yeah. It's a totally different game for somebody who's used to spending $30,000 a month or $200,000 a month to somebody who's spending $1 million a month, because you not only have to think like the creative and the account setup and the creative fatigue, that's one thing. The other thing is like, how does what I'm doing here impact the other channels and attribution and all of that stuff, which is a different level of thinking in my opinion.
Yeah. I think they should have spent probably like 1.5x the budget you're hoping to spend.
Yeah.
So they can get comfortable. Like, you know, so let's say you're spending $100,000 a month. You don't need someone who spent $1 million a month.
Right.
You won't have that creative fatigue. You should have someone who spent $150,000, $200,000.
Yeah. That'll protect you even with Black Friday and all the fluctuations. Yeah. The other thing we have them do is basically a creative breakdown or a creative run through. Like, how would you go about creative? How do you think about creative? How do you brief creative, et cetera? And then the other one we do is a live account audit. Just to see, okay, you know, we'll give them an account where we know there are inefficiencies and efficiencies and try to see what they call out, what they would do differently.
What are some inefficiencies or what are some efficiencies that people have called out? I'm curious.
So one is like, you know, how do you build the funnel? Like, how do you build that middle of funnel audience, or how do you build the people with having intent, because maybe this is a high AOV purchase that's not an immediate purchase, but it's something that takes 3 or 4 months. And, you know, when people mention things like, oh, we run awareness ads or we run website click ads, it's like, oh, you're not doing it right at all.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing it based off how a blog post says to do it, but not like you haven't done this before.
Because you're like still looking at awareness and not conversion.
I would, if I'm selling a furniture that you have to put together, I would probably make a conversion event within variant selection or customizing a couch and try to build that funnel that way, or think about... you know, is there something we can do on the email side, build that list and nurture via email, but still conversion-based, but focused on attracting new people and bringing them in.
Wow. Okay. So an audit of it would be like, okay, I see your conversion event is a sale. You are selling sofas. Maybe your conversion event should be get an email address, because this is going to be a 30-day process to sell this person.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting. Okay.
Or the other way around. You know, you're trying to get more people to your site. You're running website clicks campaigns, which everybody knows those campaigns are built for people to click and then never come back again.
Yeah.
You know, and like people who don't call that out blows my mind.
there's this guy, I'm not going to say his name because I'm a little afraid. I'm not sure he wants me to say his name, but I had a brunch with him and it was mind blowing because he was spending more than $100,000 a day on Facebook. I've been able to spend $1 million a month on Facebook. I've never been able to crack $2 million or even like 1.5 in a way where I'm like proud of it.
Yeah.
He was.
Wow.
You know, 3, 4 million, 7 million a month he could get to. You know, obviously there was a team and they're like, look, the thing you need to understand is you need to crack conversion. You're never going to be able to do this in conversion. You have to get to website clicks to spend $7 million.
Yeah.
If you can crack website clicks and actually get them to convert, the world is your oyster. You are going to be rich beyond measure.
Yeah.
But if you can't, $1 million is your cap. You might not get to $1 million, but you'll never get past $1 million.
Yeah. I think of it like having three cups or three jars next to each other. And I think website clicks is jar two, but until you fill jar one, you can't really start talking about jar two.
Yes.
I remember Curology back in the day used to do the same thing with video view campaigns because they were so cheap to show that even a small conversion rate on such low cost video view ads was still, that was like their third bucket.
Wow.
Okay. Where they could really scale spend. God,
Curology is a brand I haven't heard of in a long time.
I know. I wonder how they're doing.
Yeah, me too.
They were kind of part of that era of like Smile Direct and Dollar Shave, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah. Like I used to have this brunch in San Francisco with e-commerce people. And, you know, the guy who started Curology, David, would come. And then his brother, I think his like mother was a dermatologist. He was a dermatologist. His brother was like the CTO.
Wow.
It was like a family business. It was really cool. What are the questions that you should ask agencies if you're going to, like, what are two questions that people should ask an agency when they're about to hire them for Facebook ads?
One, I think people should ask is like, you know, tell me about clients who didn't work out and why didn't they work out? I think that's one that says a lot. One, I think, is just understanding like communication process, depending on if they're doing creative or if they're not doing creative, you got to understand communication and that's got to be tight. I'm trying to think like outside of just the basic questions. You know, basic questions would be like, what do you spend for?
Yeah.
What kind of customer do you normally go after for majority of your clients? Which I think is also valid because I think most agencies tend to hover around a persona that they go after. Like, you know, political agencies, they go after that persona.
Yeah. Beauty, you go after the beauty. Like,
yeah. But it's very rare to have an agency that focuses on 12 different personas that they're selling to.
Yeah. And then what about like, what if I'm talking to an agency and I'm like, let's say you've got different pods of people running it, right? Like, I would imagine that's how it works. Like, you know, you've got three people on this account, three people on this account. How many like clients should any given pod have?
That's a great question.
What's the answer to that question?
Well, it's tough. Like we're probably like three or four.
For any pod.
Yeah. But that's very rare. Like
yeah.
Most agencies are probably between 15 and 30.
Wow. That's insane.
But that's where like quality goes down.
Yeah.
You have to decide if you're like as an agency, you have to decide if you're going to compete on price, scale or service.
Yeah. 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 Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Let's get out of Facebook and move on. Cause we got to wrap up sooner rather but anyway, so one is Outdoor Voices closed all their doors.
That's crazy. I didn't see that, but
12 doors and they,
I wonder if, Mickey Drexler's out.
He's been out for a long time.
Oh, he's been out.
Yeah,
okay.
He's been out for a long time.
Because that was his idea, right? He wanted the stores.
So, you know, rumor is Outdoor Voices is going bankrupt.
Yeah.
In fact, I think it might already be in bankruptcy. I'm not sure if they're technically in bankruptcy or not, but they're definitely going bankrupt. And the business is for sale. And I can, you know, 12 people have told me it's for sale. So,
Did you look at the numbers?
I have not seen recent numbers.
Okay.
But... you know, the way that they announced that they were closing their doors was they emailed or Slacked. They did something where like one day they told all their employees in their doors, stores are closed, you're fired.
Oh, wow.
And they messaged them rather than like did it individually. So I went and looked at two stores, the one in New York, and I was traveling a little bit. And I looked at one in Washington, D.C. recently. And I saw one on Facebook. Or maybe it's Instagram. And so there was no notice. So people put up a sign. The one in Washington, D.C. says, we're closed. Sayonara. Good luck to you. Good luck to everyone. Like it was very like another one had a sign that said we were fired yesterday. Here's the Venmos of all the employees in case you'd like to donate.
Yikes.
Like it wasn't a good.
That's not good.
Yeah. But, you know, one of the things was. They just fired everyone and they didn't give them any like, you know, they didn't do it privately, like talking one-on-one and being like, hey, Nick,
we got to close the stores. It's a business decision. Like, you know, we're going to go out of business, so we got to let you go. They just messaged everyone. How do you think about that? Like, you know, there have been a couple of people who've been recording getting fired, and then those videos go like viral on TikTok or Instagram.
Yep.
How do you think about that? Like, is it wrong for a business to let people go via email now when people are doing this?
I mean, obviously, I can't understand the position that OV is in. From my point of view, I think that's a terrible way to do it.
Yeah.
You're talking about, like, if you're employing somebody, you're not just like an employer. You're the one responsible for the food on their table, the rent bill that they pay, maybe their kids' tuition. And I feel like you got to do it compassionately.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to let people go very compassionately. It's on the person who's doing it to do that right. Like, otherwise, they shouldn't have that role.
Yeah, I think you're right about that as well. When you were saying that, it reminded me of this episode of The Office where, like, Phyllis is getting married and Michael Scott's like, you know, I pay her salary. And so it's like I'm paying for the wedding.
Yeah. You know? That's when he didn't have the hotel room.
Which is so funny. So I do want to talk a little bit about them. The history of AOV, in 2018, they had a valuation of $110 million. It's all public information, I think. They had 52 weeks of inventory on hand, which was crazy.
Wow.
2019, they spent $25 million in marketing. They burned $20 million and hit $50 million in revenue. So lost $20 million in 2019. Half the revenue at that time was coming from brick and mortar stores.
Mm-hmm.
In 2020, they raised $12 million at a valuation of $30 million with a 2X liquidation preference. And wow. I think now it's all bankrupt.
Yeah.
Which is really sad. It's a real, like, you know, it's a brand that I loved. I hope that whoever ends up buying it continues it. I think there were a lot of mistakes in that brand. Just talking to people that used to work there for a really long time. You know, we had Ty on our episode. And like, there was clearly three different visions between the VCs, Mickey, and her.
Yeah.
And I think that really strained the brand in a way that was possibly irreparable. But I also think that, like, you know, I love their brand and I would constantly buy their products. And every day, like probably every week, I'd be like, let me go to Outdoor Voices and buy whatever they've created. And there was nothing new.
Yeah.
Like, you know, one of the hard parts about running an apparel brand is you have to constantly drop new product. You know how often True Classic or Cuts or 10,000 has to drop new product? Like, they need developers in-house to be doing this all the time.
And, like, whether they like it or not, they are competing with Shein.
That's right. Yeah. Right? That's right. And Amazon even, like...
Amazon fashion has taken off.
It's not bad anymore. Like, you know,
no,
you look
it's
at
good
it, like,
stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so really sad that this didn't work out, but pretty crazy that the way they closed the door.
So, okay, if you were to evaluate buying that business, how would you evaluate it? Like, what are the things you would ask for? And then what are the things you would look for in what you asked?
You know, I'd be like, why did this business go bankrupt? I need to understand what wasn't working. Are stores working? Are stores a profitable revenue channel or are they not? Here's a few things. I'd be like, what can I turn off in order to make this business profitable?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's obviously not right now. Can I fire, like, you know, is it firing people? Is it letting people go in a compassionate way? Is it closing doors? Is it reducing headcount? Is it you have too much debt and, like, you just couldn't pay it off? You have too much inventory, but ultimately it has good bones. I don't think that was true with OV. Like, what are the problems that led to this bankruptcy? I need to understand those first. And then can I turn those around? Like, if it's closing doors, okay, go through bankruptcy and then you're removed of all of your lease obligations. You can close all 9 doors. You don't have to pay any more in terms of like, you know, your rent or your wages to those employees. Is it something else? Is it like, you know, you're spending too much on marketing, which I have a hard time believing that they were doing that. I bet they were already, like, I never saw ads for OV any longer.
Yeah.
Is it that people just don't want this product anymore? Like, is it like, you know,
it's like
not
the brand
savable?
Out.
Yeah. It's not savable. You know, what does your direct consumer business look like? What does it look like if I cut all marketing spend? What does your brick and mortar business look like? What does it look like if I cut all marketing spend? Which one is a profitable channel? And then the other thing, if there was a brick and mortar business is that I would think about is there a reason where, like, you know, for instance, you have a store in New York and in DC and Los Angeles or whatever it is. Do you see more revenue as a result of those stores? Because one of the things I need to understand is if I close all the stores, can I count on this direct consumer revenue to be there? Or will I lose 25% of it because the stores led to the revenue there? So I think those are all questions that I'd want to understand. The reality is I'd probably never touch this anyway because I don't like apparel businesses.
Yeah,
like apparel businesses,
It's too much work. It's like, you know, I ran a flash sale site and it was the worst thing in the world because every day you had to find a new deal and you had to talk about the new deal and introduce the new deal. And it was so much effort. And I didn't like doing that because I was like, every day we got to go source something new. With personal care, you don't have to source it. Like, you know, everything is pretty steady all the time because it's a consumable product. With clothing, you got to go and source new designs and new styles all the time. And then you have all these inventory management issues. Like, you know, one of the issues that I would think about at OV is, okay, how much dead inventory is there here? Like, you know, do you have all these styles that you produced 3 years ago in triple XL that didn't sell or in this color that didn't sell? What are we going to do with all this dead inventory?
I wonder if there's anything like salvageable around the IP of Outdoor Voices. Also, I wonder how somebody would put a valuation on that. Because if the option's just to buy the whole company and you just want the IP, it's probably not remotely close to the same.
You know, I bet it's very close to the same.
Really?
I think that business you can have for a very low price.
Huh.
Because I don't think anybody's ready to touch it. Like there, you know, this one time, my family was looking at a house and it was like a rather nice house. And everybody who had owned it previously lost money on it.
Hmm.
And one of the things that like gave us heart, my brother said this, he's like, you know, one of the things I'm worried about is this seems like a great deal, but everybody who touches this gets burned.
Hmm.
And that's true for Outdoor Voices as well. It's like that scene in The Godfather where, have you seen The Godfather?
No.
Oh my God.
I gotta watch it.
Jesus. They should strip you of your U.S.
citizenship. I don't know if I was born.
I wasn't born for The Godfather. But it's like a classic.
I gotta watch it then.
But anyway, like what happens is Don Corleone is in Las Vegas and he wants to buy this casino from this other guy. Like they're partners in casino. Michael Corleone and this guy named Mo Green. And he goes to Mo Green. And he's like, I want to buy you out because your business loses money. And he's like, you think I'm stealing money? Like, what are you doing? And he's like, no, you're unlucky. And I'm not sure if you touch Outdoor Voices, you're just unlucky.
Yeah.
Which is a superstitious way of thinking about things, but something I do think about sometimes.
Yeah.
But I also like, you know, really, but that's not really the reason. Like Victoria's Secret has a market cap of $1.4 billion and they did $6 billion in revenue last year. Like, I just don't love apparel.
Yeah, that sounds terrible.
Yeah, it sounds like a very, very tough business.
I also feel like with apparel, it either hits really well or it's a grind to try to get people to like it.
I also feel like it dies so
quick.
Like,
look at Allbirds. Yeah.
Like, Allbirds is gone. Even 10,000, I rarely see 10,000 these days.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of brands just existed and then don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And I think it's real. Like, I think it's hard to be relevant. You know, what Nike has done is something that nobody else has been able to achieve because they've been relevant for so long. And the way they've done that is to constantly partner with athletes that are on the verge of becoming, you know, the athlete of the decade or the century.
Right.
And, you know, nobody else has been able to do anything close to that.
It's pretty interesting. Like Nike has essentially done the record label model with athletes.
Yeah, that's right.
And sponsorships.
Yeah, they really have.
Yeah.
Okay, I wanted to talk about two other things really quickly. Okay, three things really quickly. One's just an interesting fact.
Mm-hmm.
Tesla started advertising in 2023. They spent $6.3 million in ads last year.
Wow.
GM, before they would not spend. I think this year they're going to spend even more because they're like, sales are going down. GM last year spent $3.6
billion. Oh my God.
Tesla spent $6.3 million. GM equated to $580 of spend for every car sold in ads.
Okay.
That's their CAC, $580 in ads. For a car sold. Pretty crazy.
Wow.
Okay. Anyway, just I thought that was interesting, so I wanted to share it. Here's this other thing that I was thinking, which is Ozempic. Mm. Ozempic is insane. You know people on it. I know people on it, or you probably should. I'm sure you know people on it.
Mm-hmm.
What are the ramifications of Ozempic? Here's what I was thinking recently, or I was having this conversation with people recently. How fucked is General Mills? How fucked is Frito-Lay? How fucked is Equinox because Ozempic exists? January 1st, 2025, I might be on Ozempic. You know, I would consider taking it. But think about all the people who sign up for the gym in January.
What if Ozempic becomes the new sign-up wave instead of the gym?
Why do I even need the gym? I need the gym for muscle. If I want muscle, I got it. I need the gym. If I want to lose weight, why would I do all this?
Take a pill.
Why don't I take this pill? That's like seems to be good from a diabetic perspective, a stroke perspective, a heart disease perspective. Doesn't this hurt Equinox? Doesn't this hurt General Mills? Like who? Like imagine if you start taking Ozempic for, I don't know, a month and you're like, for a month, you don't eat Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
isn't that the end of like, you know, think about the body blows of businesses that will be to these businesses.
Yeah. I'm not really sure how that market will get affected, because I still feel like Ozempic is probably a top 15% of the population type of a substance or usage. That would be my general guess. Top 15%?
Yeah. First, that's still a lot of people. 15% is ginormous.
Like, but I feel like the General Mills crowd is like the bottom.
Yeah. Okay, but 65%. Like Coca-Cola isn't. And, you know, Coca-Cola's everywhere. You know who drinks a lot of Diet Coke? Donald Trump.
Yeah.
You know who else drinks a bunch, I think, is Warren Buffett.
Yep.
That's a body blow to them.
Totally.
And like, you know who should get on Ozempic? Probably Donald Trump and Warren Buffett. And like, you know, Unilever is trying to spin off Ben and Jerry's. Why are they trying to do that? You know, is it Ozempic related? It's
right.
Not insane idea.
Yeah.
And look, Ben and Jerry's is a, you know, is a top 15% brand. And like, it's top 15% today in the same way that an iPhone, when I bought an iPhone in 2006, and nobody had one.
Right.
And it was a silly, very expensive purchase for something that didn't provide you a lot. Today, everyone has one.
Yep.
What happens when Ozempic is in a pill?
It is. I think it's maybe in a pill now.
Okay, well, if it's in a pill now and it was available, I'd probably try it.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, let me see how this works. And then, like, you know, doesn't it become a top 50% maybe? And doesn't it become the people with diabetes and that are overweight are like, let me save a bunch of money because instead of doing the gastric bypass surgery, this prevents me from eating. But it really, I think food brands and gym brands may be in for a lot of pain in the next decade as a result of this.
I think that's probably generally right. I've talked to a few people on MentorPass and they're starting a business around GLP.
What's GLP?
Ozempic.
Okay.
And the demand is insane. Like, there's no shortage of demand.
That's right. Yeah.
There's no issue trying to get customers here. It'll be interesting to see outside of the Hims and the Romans of the world, who else emerges out leading with Ozempic and then going into other categories.
This might be one of the brands where you're like, if you're Eli Lilly making Mounjaro, you might be like, let me vertically integrate this. You know, Eli Lilly is a $700 billion market cap company now.
Wow.
On the verge of becoming a $1 trillion business. But like, you know, why not control themselves? They've created an amazing product.
Yeah.
Why would you let
and him- limit and, competitors yeah, exactly. from getting the supply.
Yeah. Okay, what's the market cap? Okay, it doesn't say. But anyway, I think it's a very expensive company.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to business ideas, and then we'll wrap up this episode because we got to get going soon. I had a couple business ideas that I wanted to share with you. I don't know if anyone's doing this, but you know, let's say today we launched a sale for April 1st. We launched a sale for April Fool's Day. You're going to launch a sale for Memorial Day. In the meantime, you launched a new product. You made a change to your website. And then 6 months from now, you're like, something isn't right. Or a year from now, you're like, I want to compare this April to how I did last April. You want to remember what you did that last April? And there's no like timeline of events for your business.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to be almost like when you're a kid, you have like this sheet and you have to go get all these vaccines. And they're like, okay, did you get this vaccine? What day? Did you get this vaccine? What day?
Mm-hmm.
Like a timeline of like what happened to you. Almost like a calendar, a Google calendar. Like if you want to look back at what you did a year ago, probably go back to your calendar and be like, how did I spend my time?
Right.
Good way to do that is probably just looking at your calendar. I wish something like that existed for your business where you're like, I can record all events for my business on this timeline, all important events. So a year from now, when I'm comparing April 2025 to April 2024, I can be like, what are the things that drove business in April 2024? Okay, I had an April Fool's Day email. I launched a new deodorant scent. I made this change to my website, which increased conversion. Like, you know, so you can go, or a month from now, you might be like, my conversion rate has gone down. What did we change?
Yeah.
And then you can go back and be like, oh yeah, here are the three like last changes we made from a conversion rate optimization perspective that we should probably take a look at and see, should we roll back because it might have hurt our conversion rate, even though we thought it helped. Does that timeline exist anywhere?
No, and not that I can think of. Yeah, but I think it's gotta be, the problems I could see or the reasons why maybe it hasn't existed is if you're like a solopreneur, I could see how that would work very easily. But if you've got an agency for CRO and an e-commerce merchandiser and somebody, you know, rebuys coming in and making changes to your theme, it could be very hard. But I think if you still assign one global owner to the site, you should be able to have that log with no issues.
And I think it would actually be super helpful because like everyone would be responsible for logging. So you're like, okay, what did we do? Let's take a look at what's been logged. Especially because like people make changes and they're like, what hurt our website? We need to go back and take a look at this.
Right.
And I would imagine, you know, Facebook must have this internally to be like, what did we change? And did this improve our business?
Yeah.
I think Triple Whale or Northbeam or like, you know, one of these dashboards that you're reliant on, I think that'd be really important. And also like, that'd be really valuable and give you an idea of like, cause they're also integrated with so many things. It's easy for them to be like, you sent out an email this day because we're already integrated with Klaviyo. You increase Facebook ads this day because we're already integrated with Facebook ads.
Yeah. I think heatmap.com is working on this because they do attribute revenue to every button click and every change on the site. Okay, I'd imagine this could be something they could probably add in easily.
Yeah, yeah. You do have to integrate Klaviyo or Sendlink or whatever you're using, but I do think that someone should do this because, you know, it'd be nice to be able to go back and be like, what did we do last year to make our business grow?
Yeah, and, or like why did conversion rate spike from 2.5% to 4%? Right. Oh, it's because we ran this massive sale in Klaviyo.
That's right. Or like, you know, oh, we sent out a bunch of direct mail or we had podcast ads, which we completely forgot about and aren't memorialized anywhere.
You know, this almost feels a little bit like what Triple Whale is trying to do with their like AI assistant, but it really does require so many more inputs than just Triple Whale.
Definitely. Right? Yeah. It needs a human being to be like, we need to input this thing
out
there. Yeah. We need to log this, like a timeline of events for this country, a timeline of events for this business.
Yeah.
Okay. That was one business. One other quick one. And then we'll wrap up because we're at time. There's this guy named Nelson Peltz. Do you know who Nelson Peltz is?
No.
He is a rich, rich, old guy. What he does is he buys companies. He buys a little share in a company and he wants to put two of his guys on the board of directors and pressure them to sell assets, spin off assets, just make some changes to unlock shareholder value. Some of those changes may make sense. Some of them may not make sense. So he'll be like, hey, he did this to P&G. He's like, hey, look, P&G, you don't have enough new brands. You have all these old brands. Like, you know, let's shake things up. He did this to P&G 6 years ago. He's recently been doing this to Disney. And he'll go on to Disney and be like, look, we have all this. Like, 5 years ago or 10 years ago, we bought great IP. We bought Marvel. We brought Star Wars in. You know, those were great assets that we could bring into theme parks and cruises and extend our IP. We haven't done anything smart for a while. I'm going to bring in some fresh blood to shake things up. And everyone, like, if you're the company, you hate this because you're like, you're going to bring in board. If I'm the CEO of Disney and they just beat them, like they just won the, it's called a proxy fight where he's like, I want to put two of my directors on your company. And as Disney CEO, you're like, I don't want your directors because they're going to try and tell me how to do my job. They're going to try and tell everybody else, hey, Bob Iger sucks. Let's fire him. I'm going to lose my job if I lose this.
Right.
So I don't want your guys on here. So what happens is there's a vote. Okay, there's a vote and we decide whether all Disney shareholders get to vote as to see whether his directors join our board. P&G supposedly spent $100 million fighting back Nelson Peltz.
Wow.
Disney spent more than $100 million. They said it was the most expensive proxy, so more than the P&G one, to try and fight off Nelson Peltz. And like, you know, there's no organization yet that is created to fight. This is a weird marketing pitch that I'm making. There's no organization created to fight proxy battles. There's PR firms. You got a PR firm. Yeah. But now you got to win Google ads. You got to get the CEO on CNBC talking about why his strategy is better than Nelson's.
It's like a reputation firm almost.
That's right. Yes. But now you need direct media buying in the same way that there's a political contest. There should be a contest. You need to send out emails. Bob Iger wants your vote because he's got a strategy for Disney. Can he count on you? Can Mickey Mouse count on you?
It's almost like a political agency.
That's right.
Like
that's
political
what it is.
Ad agency.
Yeah, that's what it is for businesses.
But just for this.
Yeah, just for this, where you're just like, I know where to put the CEO. I know how to get, and like, you know, a lot of people are like, you know, shareholders of Disney are like you and me, just regular Joe Schmoes, and their vote will matter. And so I was thinking about, like, you know, I wasn't thinking about creating it, but I think someone should create a marketing agency for these types of proxy contests. You can charge a fortune.
Yeah.
When Bob Iger is trying to defend, like, the $100 million or $200 million he spends comes out of Disney's bank account.
Right.
So he's like, look, if I spend this $200 million, I get to keep my job. If I get to spend your $200 million to keep my job, guess what I'm going to do? Spend your $200 million. Yeah. I want to be the CEO of Disney. It's an awesome job. I want to be the CEO of P&G. It's an awesome job. So I don't mind dipping into this coffer in a significant way in order to keep my job. It's not my coffer.
Like, it's not all my coffer, at least.
Yeah.
And so I'll spend $500 million to win this proxy contest. And so, you know, I think somebody could come in and say, look, we're going to give you, we're going to not guarantee results, but we're going to do a great job. We're going to buy AdWords on Google. We're going to run Facebook ads. We're going to send out emails to our shareholders, not just like, you know, like once a week telling them what the strategy is and reminding them why you're the man. It's basically a marketing agency, but specifically for this, and the minimum buy-in, you know, you got to pay me $25 million.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought that was a great business idea. No one's done it. Someone should do it.
Be hard to get those deals. You'd have to be very well known for just that and let the deals come to you.
I think that at some point, people will try you out just because they're like, what do I give a shit about $25 million for? I just want to be the CEO of this company.
Yeah.
I'll write $25 million checks to 500 guys to do this.
Wow.
There have been a couple firms. This one guy who went to my law school, I had dinner with him once. His name is Gregory Taxon. He created a firm where he's like, look, I'm going to tell shareholders how they should vote. So I'm like, look, this is too much work for you to know. I'll tell you how you should vote. So you should vote for Nelson Peltz against Disney, or you should vote for Disney. You should vote for P&G, or you should vote for Nelson Peltz. Like this, and there's a lot of guys who are doing it, not just Nelson Peltz. Like this is happening all the time.
Yeah.
And there's like smaller ways to do this too. But like basically he created a firm and he's like, I'm going to tell all shareholders how I think they should vote. I've done a ton of research on it. They don't have the time to do a bunch of research. And Vanguard owns a ton of Disney shares. Vanguard will listen to this guy and say, whoa, Glass Lewis tells us to vote this way. Oh, ISS tells us to vote this way. That's how we're going to vote. So I think there is a way to do this, but it might take a little bit of time.
Totally. That's a great idea.
Okay, that's a wrap for this episode. Super excited. Next episode is going to be much better than this one. We're going to hear a Facebook lowdown of Nick Sharma's cheat sheet that he stole from Mark Zuckerberg's office. It's not actually that, but it'll be good.
Something like that.
All right, looking forward to episode 2. See you guys next week.
See ya.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next time to cut through the noise in CPG, retail, and e-commerce.
And if you enjoyed this episode, then why not share it with a friend? And be sure to subscribe wherever you listen so you don't miss the next one.